6 seconds left. Halla gets it up top. Marchessault to the right. Big shot! Score! Shane Theodore! Vegas takes the lead 4-3! 2.3 to go! Perron to the circle. He shoots and scores! David Perron wins it! Up top for Kopitar. Feet to the right. Shot! Stopped by Fleury!
Shane Theodore is fourth and a huge hit by McNabb. He leveled Arvidsson. Wow.
Here's Howell into the zone. Howell left side, drop pass, big shot, score! That's John Merrill! Merrill puts Vegas on top, 2-1!
And welcome on in to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Day in between games, Columbus. Last night, Detroit on the horizon. Rough night for the Golden Knights. They lose 4-1 to the Blue Jackets. Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish here. But Frank, for as tense as the mood was around the radio station yesterday, a bit of levity today, a little bit of better mood, even though the Golden Knights lost UNLV into the next round at the Mountain West. So a couple of smiles around the old office today.
Yeah, a couple of smiles here and there. And they certainly didn't make it easy on themselves going to overtime, no. But they do get the victory. And they will advance to the next round of the Mountain West tournament. And I think maybe part of the reason that the mood's a little bit better around here today is, let's face it, we haven't seen a lot of people. So, you know, it's
that's true.
Can't find negative if you don't run into them.
But true.
I mean, everything. But, you know, last night, as we're watching the game at Born and Raised, there seemed to be a little bit of a lull there and a kind of a dark cloud over the room in that. But then I thought that anybody that tuned into the postgame show, maybe that was lifted a little bit and the sky started clearing and the sun came out again, even though it was nighttime, because Gerard Gallant didn't really seem in a bad mood at all. He basically said, look, this is one of the best games we played in a while. We play this game, we win probably 4 out of 5 of them, even though on the scoreboard it looks like it's a one-way battle. Vegas did outshoot them, had 38 shots in the game. Gallant thought that they did get a little bit greasy. They just didn't necessarily put it in the back of the net. So Gerard Gallant seemed kind of upbeat for a team that has lost 4 of their last 5. Well, what, 1-3-1 in those games. But, you know, people like to say, well, let's dwell on the negative. So they lost 4 of their last 5, even though one was in overtime. But Gerard Gallant seemed kind of upbeat about it. So, I found that a little bit surprising, but also encouraging.
There were good things to take away from it. It was exciting to see Pierre-Édouard Bellemare back. He was noticeable in the game, but a tough go of it for Riley Smith. We saw him exit the game in the second period, did not return for the third. We don't have any more information on him today. It was a total complete off day for the team in Detroit. They will have a morning skate tomorrow, so hopefully tomorrow afternoon we'll have a little bit more information. Steve Karp from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, he's traveling with the team on this road trip. We hope to hear some information from him, but maybe it'll be like Eric Halla, where it looked worse than it was, and he missed a skate and then came back the next day. Hopefully that's what's going on with Riley Smith.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I hope as well, because Riley Smith and that whole line has been absolutely incredible. But one of the reasons they've been as incredible as they are is because all three pieces work so well together. And they've gotten to know each other. They know what the other one's going to do before they do it. And last night we saw Tomáš Tatar get in there and get some opportunities on that line. And I really like Tatar's game, and I think he is going to fit in well. And I know some people right now, they're not happy. They're 1-3 since he's joined the team. He's a -5 on the ice. What's going on? This guy's, well, calm down. He's played with 4 different lines. He's been out there all over the place, playing power plays, playing different things with basically no practices with these guys. I still think he has the opportunity to be a good player. But as much as I like him, I don't want to see him with Carlson and Marchessault very long, because I want to see Smith back, because that line has been magical, and I want to see him put in with somebody else where maybe it'll be just as good, if not a better fit overall, and he can find that place where he fits in and then go on from there and get ready for this run into the playoffs.
Certainly things are disrupted on the top line with Riley Smith's absence. We did see him fill in with Jonathan Marchessault with William Karlsson. And Gerard Gallant had to lean heavily on David Perron, Eric Halla, Alex Tuck, the three of them playing together. And they were good last night. They were noticeable.
Yeah, they were noticeable, and they had opportunities. And Perron's one of those guys who, boy, if he doesn't play for your team, it seems like people just don't like him. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I have to admit, when I was watching Blackhawk games all those years and he was with St. Louis, I did not like David Perron. And maybe I didn't like him because I saw how many different little things he did out there that helped the team win games, even when he didn't score. But last night in Columbus, wow, they were booing him. And when he got the double minor, they were really all over him. And but he has such good instincts and such good hands. And as good as he is at creating opportunities to score goals, he's maybe even better at creating opportunities for his teammates because he is an absolute assist machine on this team. But again, that still poses a question of, where's James Neal? What is going on with James Neal?
Yeah, and you hope that James Neal is closer than further away from returning, and maybe it's one of the situations where there's not a pressing need to bring him back too soon. We hope that is the case. And David Perron is one of those guys, and I think he gets under people's skin because he doesn't allow himself to get pushed around. And you look at David Perron and his skill set, and you think of him as he's a finesse player. He might be a guy that you would maybe think is soft and that you could push around a little bit, but he'll fight back. He'll scrap back, and he says, no, you're not going to push me around, and I don't need somebody else to come to my defense. You want to put a hand in my face, I'm going to put a hand in yours. And I think that really irritates and bothers people because they want to bully him, and he punches the bully back.
Well, and let's face it, too. It's not just that he puts a hand back in your face, but because he's a veteran, I think he's a little savvy at knowing how to put a stick in certain areas or a knee. Not that he's dirty, but he will definitely do other things to irritate you and get under your skin and try to take you off your game. Because let's be honest about it. Part of being not an instigator, but a guy who's tough to play against, if he can take you mentally out of your game, then he wins the battle. And his line and the team is winning the battle there. If you can take other guys out from what they're doing and get their mind off of exactly what their job is, then they don't do their job as well. And I think Perron's one of those kind of guys. And I think that's why opposing teams and opposing fan bases don't like him. Because he is good at getting under there without being dirty, without trying to injure anybody, because you never want to do that kind of stuff, and Perron doesn't. But he's pretty adept at doing little things to just irritate the heck out of people that make them maybe want to do other stuff, and all of a sudden they forget to play the defense or check somebody or do a back check or maybe cover a guy who's coming down the lane because they want to stay with Perron and maybe mix it up a little bit. And then they turn around and they go, wait a second, who just scored? Where did it come from? Oh, yeah, the guy that I was supposed to be covering, because he can get you off your game. And that's a big asset.
It is a huge asset, and he's one of those people that sort of reminds me of, like, he'll treat you the way that you treat him. And if you want to play a nice, clean, honest hockey game, he's more than willing to do that. But if you want to stick the butt of your stick in his ribs, he's going to stick it back in yours. And that's what I like about him, is he doesn't take a bunch of crap from people that want to push him around. And that's what I've always felt like. If you want to be treated like an adult, then treat me like one. And when people don't treat David Perron like a civilized human being, he has no problem giving it right back.
Well, and you really don't have to look any farther to know what David Perron means to a team than to one of the first people to contact him, if not the first person after the expansion draft. It was Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, when Marc-Andre Fleury, one of the initial calls or people that they made to each other was Perron and Fleury, and Perron talked about it in the piece that he did about how he was sitting there by the lake and wondering what's going on. I thought I was going to be in St. Louis for the rest of my career, and I love it here, and now I'm going to Vegas. What do I do? Well, me and Flower sat down. We talked on the phone for quite a while. What we thought was going to be a couple minutes turned into a long, long conversation. He felt a lot better. Fleury felt better. But they had that respect for each other. So if Marc-Andre Fleury believed him beforehand, although I'm sure Fleury didn't like playing against Perron when he was with St. Louis, he knew what an asset he could be on this team. You don't have to go any farther than find somebody's real character or worth in a locker room and on the ice than if they're endorsed by Marc-Andre Fleury, in my opinion.
All right, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish, Chris Chapman behind the board, and David Perron's footprints were all over the successful moments that the Golden Knights had last night, including being the primary assist man on our play of the game. And our play of the game is brought to you by Best Mattress. Best Mattress play of the game. Best Mattress, best service, best selection, best price guaranteed. Eric Howla on the first goal.
Perron brings it to the top of the right circle. Turns forehand, escapes, feeds the middle. Howla scores! Beautiful shot from Eric Howla. And Vegas ties the game 1-1, 90 seconds into the second period.
And just 90 seconds in, things were going well there. You thought maybe they had turned the corner, built a little bit of momentum. That would prove to be the only goal that the Golden Knights would get. But that play was all made by David Perron, keeping his possession, bringing it to the half wall, and then just knowing where that open ice was going to be to hit Erik Haula in stride.
Yeah, and certainly Perron set everything up and put Haula in a position to succeed. But that being said, kudos to Haula for still burying that puck, because we've seen a lot of guys in position to score that haven't necessarily scored. One up in Vancouver now that has been scoring recently for the Canucks, and good for him in Leipzig. But, you know, just because you're set up there doesn't mean you bury it. Haula's been a real nice piece this year. I believe that was his 24th goal this season. Mm-hmm. Perron's 44th assist. I mean, those guys, they work well together as well. Haula's certainly one of the big surprises, I think, to a lot of people from the start of the season. But I really like his game as well. And another piece that maybe a lot of people around the NHL are going, where did this come from? But when you play with guys like Perron, it certainly helps your chances to get those kind of numbers.
Yeah, and Erik Haula in the locker room after the game, Erik Haula was one of the guys that sort of stepped forward and addressed the things that they did well and the things that they need to work on when he spoke with Gary Lawless.
They're a team that's fighting for their lives, and you guys haven't sort of had that situation yet. Pierre Edouard said that you guys need to figure out a way to find that urgency and that and match that that intensity early on. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just saying earlier, I think it's that time of the year. Like you said, everyone's fighting for a playoff spot. It's you know, live or die moments right now, and we got to get to that. Not you know, just for the sake of coming down the stretch. You know, that's when you need to play your best hockey. You know, it doesn't help to look back you know, at the great months we had earlier. You know, it's when you go into the end of the year, it's really important to be at your best and you know, steamroll in the next phase.
Someone would look at the scoreboard and see, you know, you had, you know, almost 20 more shots on goal than them for a good chunk of the game. What's the difference?
We didn't score. They scored. I said it earlier. I think we could have played harder in the D zone. They had a little bit too much time. That's things that we can do better. But you know, we did some good things. You know, we played some good hockey for stretches of time. You can't be negative even after a loss. You got to find the positives and just try to figure out what we can do better. And you know, we're not far from it. We just gotta get to that next level.
That was Erik Haula after last night's game with Gary Lawless. And that's one of the things he says you got to look at. You got to be aware of the negatives, but also look for the positives.
Yeah, and by the way, Erik Haula, Gary also talked to him, and there's a couple quotes from him in an article that's on VegasGoldenKnights.com, which I thought was a very good article by Gary. VGK must match urgency and desperation of teams in the playoff chase. And Haula says in that, we're missing guys, but that's no excuse for anything. We have a deep team, and we've been saying that all year. Now it's time to prove it. And that's exactly what you have to do. Because, yeah, they're banged up. So are a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. I was watching the replay of the Nashville-Dallas game when they do the condensed version a little bit before I came in here this morning. Dallas is really banged up. They're missing guys all over the place, including Ben Bishop, who just got hurt the last game when one of their own men, Ham Hughes, fell on him, basically. You don't want injuries, but injuries happen. They're everywhere. And you do have to have that next man up mentality. And one of the things that we've talked about all season long is how everybody has been stepping up. And they're still stepping up, but not to the level that they did before. Because now they're playing other teams. Because these teams are hungry. And because some of them are trying to make the playoffs, or maybe some guys are just playing for a job to impress their bosses for next year or some other team or something down the road, whatever the reason. Other teams have now put it up to the next notch. Then there's going to be the playoff notch, which is going to be even higher. Vegas has to pick it up. They played a lot of emotional games, and maybe their emotion, and they already ramped it up to a level higher than some of the teams earlier in the season. But now those teams have also picked it up. Now Vegas has to make that adjustment, and they have to pick it up as well, or they're going to continue to lose games to teams that maybe they shouldn't. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have lost to Columbus. Columbus is a pretty good team. But Detroit tomorrow night, they should beat that team. Buffalo, although Buffalo's played well here and there, they should beat that team. But they also should have beat Ottawa at home at T-Mobile, and they didn't. You have to pick it up, because none of these teams are coming in here going, oh, let's just lay down for the best story in hockey, the best story in sports. No, they're going, let's knock these guys off the pedestal everybody else has put them on.
Right. right. And there certainly is, though, a little bit of thought, though, to when some certain guys come back and the necessity of that. And we talked about James Neal and how soon do you rush him back, or Nate Schmidt, how soon do you rush him back, or Lucas Pisa, how soon do you rush him back? And there is a certain logic to, you know, if you think about something, Frank, like the Tour de France and the guy in the maillot jaune and the yellow jersey that's got a 3 or a 4 minute lead, he doesn't necessarily have to respond to every attack on the hill, or all those that are around him that are 4 or 5 minutes back certainly have to press and attack. And maybe that's where the Golden Knights have an advantage in when they bring certain guys back. But the guys that are out on the ice have got to match that intensity level.
Right, yeah. But and to just expand on your analogy a little bit there, no, he doesn't have to address every attack that comes his way, but his team has to make sure that they help him move along mm-hmm. enough to still keep that lead, or at least not get it bitten into too much.
Right.
So it's still the team effort, and that's what these other guys have to do. When James Neal's not there, the other guys have to step up and fill his role. Maybe they can't do what James Neal does, but they have to do something to accommodate and make up for him not being in that lineup. And that's where I think some of these guys, and maybe they haven't found that comfort level yet because they are with new teams or new lines or something like that. But that excuse only lasts so long mm-hmm. because 1-3-1 in the last 5 games, that's not getting it done from what we've seen from this team, what the fan base expects at this point, what the front office expects, what Gerard Gallant expects. And I guarantee you it's certainly not what Bill Foley's expecting right now.
Right, and with 3 games left on this road trip, Detroit, Buffalo, Philadelphia, when you look at the 4 points that are available in Detroit and Buffalo, you have to go out and take them.
Yeah, you have to go out and take them. And it's not going to be that easy because, like we said, these teams aren't going to roll over. And Philadelphia is a very dangerous team. First off, Philadelphia already beat them here at T-Mobile. Then they beat them kind of convincingly. Mm-hmm. They outplayed them. And they've lost 2 goalies. They went out and made the move to get Mrazek. He's been dynamite for them up to this point here. And now Simmons is coming back. So Philadelphia is very dangerous, which makes these next 2 games against Detroit and Buffalo even that much more necessary for them to win. Not like saying, like, oh, they can't win in Philly, but if you get 2 wins in Detroit and Buffalo, you're setting yourself up for, if we do win that, it's the cherry on top for a really good road trip. But if you lose it, which you very well might in Philadelphia with the additions they have right now, then at least you still had a successful road trip. You have to beat the teams you're supposed to beat if you want to stay on top. Now, I think they're still going to stay on top in the Pacific because, let's be honest, nobody else is lighting it up either. I thought Evander Kane was going to be a real nice addition for San Jose, and I think he's played fairly well, but it's not like they're going on a 9-game winning streak. However, in the Central, the Nashville Predators have done exactly that 9 games, and they're widening the lead now for the West. And Winnipeg is playing much better. They're getting right up. I don't know if they catch Nashville. I don't think they do. I still think Nashville's the team to beat, but it doesn't mean that they can't pass the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, some people might say, well, what difference does it make? We can only play one of them in the playoffs anyhow. Yeah, but if Winnipeg has a better record than Vegas, then they would have, then them and Nashville would both have home ice if we played them in the next series. So if you can't stay abreast of Nashville, you at least want to still stay ahead of Winnipeg. Because what if Winnipeg beats Nashville? Then you could get that home ice again. You could kind of steal it back.
And it's already been proven how difficult it is to play in both Winnipeg and Nashville, both having success on home ice against the Golden Knights. And another guy that had success on home ice against the Golden Knights was Artemi Panarin, the bread man. He had himself a wonderful game. He has the early goal, has 2 assists, a 3-point night. Could have been a 4-point night if it weren't for Tommy Cruz and his crew calling one back. But Artemi Panarin, he was your Brankus Team Realty Player of the Game. The Player of the Game brought to you by Brankus Team Realty, your home sold guaranteed, Artemi Panarin.
The left point thrown back towards the net, they score! Artemi Panarin strikes 16 seconds in. Blue Jackets 1 and the Golden Knights nothing. Feeds up to the high slot now to the left for Panarin, and a big shot score! Zach Werenski gets the return pass from Panarin, and Werenski puts the Blue Jackets ahead 2-1.
Artemi Panarin all over this game. He scored before everyone was even settled in their seats, 16 seconds in, and then two assists, and he really made the Werenski goal, holding the position, creating the space.
And him and Dubois also being part of that that line out there when they're together, they seem like they have a real chemistry. They seem to be getting a lot better, and for Blue Jackets fans, they need them to be as they make that push for a playoff run. I think this team does find a way into the playoffs, especially when Bobrovsky comes back, but Court Masella last night, and we talked about it before the game, don't look at this just okay, he has played some pretty bad games, given up four or five goals in four of the five, but the one game he won, he gave up one. Well, what did he give up last night? He gave up one on 38 shots. He looked pretty good. You can't take a backup goalie for granted. And he said before the game, and maybe Tortorella didn't tell him intentionally, or maybe he really didn't know before, but they told him about 9 o'clock in the morning yesterday. So he didn't have time to sleep on it and get nervous about it and think about it. All he had time to do was prepare and get ready for a game. He said he looked at it as an opportunity to amend some of the stuff and show his teammates that he would be there for them in this playoff stretch. He played an outstanding game. Panarin, I guess the only thing bad thing you can say about Panarin from last night is that he picked a night, too, when there were three hat tricks in the league and everybody else was looking outstanding.
Right.
So he kind of didn't get noticed maybe with all the games that were played. But he was exceptional last night. Court Masella also was so. And Dubois, like we mentioned, well, if they don't take away that one goal, who knows? Maybe he's actually the number one star of this game today because he scored the goal. But the offside happened beforehand, and great job there by Cruz and his team up in the video department and everything. But, yeah, and that's the one thing. When Hala scored that goal, that's what made it seem even bigger at the time because they dodged the bullet of the second goal. So it's 1-1 instead of you're still down 2-1, but then Columbus still kept on playing and playing and playing. Court Masella was good, and Vegas just, although on the stat sheet they outplayed him in a lot of aspects, they couldn't get one past him, and there were some costly turnovers once again that kind of hurt him.
And Artemi Panarin, all the question marks coming into the season about how he'd be able to survive on his own. Was he only successful because he was playing with guys like Patrick Kane? And what he has proven is that he has made people around him play better, and they've really seen the emergence of Pierre-Luc Dubois. That's something that John Tortorella had spoken about over the weekend and over the games leading into this, about how he needed to find the young, hungry players that were willing to put in the effort, and those are the guys that were going to get minutes on the top line, and those were the guys that were going to get minutes in crucial situations, and he seems to have found that with Panarin, Atkinson, and Dubois.
Yeah, the thing that still just makes me scratch my head with the whole thing with him in Chicago and them letting him go, I understand they're up against the salary cap. But they had just signed Panarin to an extension and gave him more money. And then by their own signings and the way that they've run their salary cap, they had to let him go. They created the monster. And then it's like, well, you know what? We gave you this. But, geez, we put ourselves up against the cap too much, so now we got to let you go. So I don't understand how something like that can happen, but you know what? When we talked about it in the preseason, when he first went there, all the people questioning him, and I loved his attitude beforehand. People are asking me if I can score without Patrick Kane. People ask me, did I only score before Patrick Kane because I was in the KHL and I had pretty good line mates with me? No, I can score. Well, guess what? He was right.
Yeah, he was right. 21 goals on the season with couple of games left to play. When we come back, Frank and I are going to dive into the rest of the league. There's a lot of news happening in the NHL today. We're going to take you through all of that right here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. Welcome back. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a Wednesday. Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish, Chris Chapman behind the board getting ready tomorrow night. First trip to Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. We will be with you at 4 o'clock for the pregame show, 4:30 for the puck drop. We'll have intermission reports and the postgame show as well. Just up the street here, Flamingo, and 215 at Parkway Tavern. So if you're in the neighborhood, come on by and enjoy the game. Frank, we're going to take a quick look around the league here. Fair amount of news. We will start with the Boston Bruins forward David Backes, who will have a hearing with the NHL Department of Player Safety today for a hit against those Red Wings. And Franz Nielsen happened in the first period of last night's game. He was issued a penalty for roughing.
Yeah, he got the penalty back us last night, and we'll see what the player safety board says about it. Backus called for interference in that game against Detroit, and well, we've seen guys get suspended before. We've seen guys get fined. I tried to find the video of that play, but I couldn't really see it, so I don't think it looked like anything really egregious when it happened. But and after further review, they're thinking maybe there's a little bit more to it.
Yeah, so you never know with the NHL. Consistency, not their strong suit.
The only thing consistent is the inconsistency.
Exactly. A couple of injuries. One in Winnipeg last night, Mark Scheifele taken off the ice, did not return.
Yeah, and Scheifele is certainly one of the big pieces there. He's had some injuries before this year as well. Scheifele, he started the game, played 10 minutes 44 seconds before he exited late in the second period. For further evaluation, at that point, he did not return for the third period. He missed 16 games earlier this season with another upper body injury. But according to their coaches, the latest problem is unrelated to Scheifele's previous issue. I don't really know if that's good or bad, because is it two separate injuries?
Exactly.
Or is it like, well, at least the one didn't come back and it's not worse and he's got it back?
One nagging injury or two separate injuries?
But it kind of sounds like the fact that he did play 10:44 and then they took him off for further evaluation. It kind of almost seems like it's like, you know what? Let's check him out and make sure he's okay. So as a hockey fan, I hope he's okay and he gets right back in there. As a Vegas Golden Knight fan, well, the way that Winnipeg's been playing lately, yeah, sit him out a few more games to get him a little bit more comfortable.
Take your time, Mark. Auston Matthews did return to practice. He was with the team today for the first time since injuring his right shoulder back on February 22nd, but it remains unclear when he will return to the lineup. He was in a red non-contact jersey and left practice after about 20 minutes.
Yeah, and you know, Mike Babcock, who's never a good quote to say anything about, he had this to say about that. I don't know what the medical staff will do. I just noticed he was wearing red today, and we don't have a whole lot of red in our uniform. By a whole lot of, he means they don't have any red in their uniform. So Auston Matthews, yeah, certainly, I mean, one of the young stars of the game. And, you know, from Phoenix, American-born, number one draft pick. This kid has everything going for him. I'm sure that although they want to get out of their slump that they're in recently, because they also would like to make a deep run in the playoffs, they'd also like to make playoff runs and deep runs for years to come. And if they're going to do that, they want to keep Mr. Matthews healthy for a long, long time.
Well, Mike Babcock was pretty outspoken yesterday when he was talking about goaltender interference, and he had said that no one knows what's going on. We better get it solved. Just saying, well, it seems as if somebody was listening to him, and that would be Bill Daly, the league's deputy commissioner, and Colin Campbell, the senior vice president of hockey operations, who said that it will be addressed, goaltender interference, at the GM meetings later this month. Daly said, obviously, it will be a point of discussion at our general manager's meetings later this month. To the extent that there is any confusion, hopefully everyone will be on the same page coming out of that meeting. It all is in regards to rule number 69, which has nine subsections, the fourth of which deals with contact outside of the goal crease. So they say that they're going to take a look at it at the general manager's meeting. No one really knows what that means either, because to make any changes, it would then have to go through the Players Association and the competition committee and the owners. And so there's a lot of steps to getting a rule changed.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it. I mean, Babcock was pretty adamant that they need this done before the playoffs this year. The reality is it looks like that probably will not be able to make a change or do something, because, like you said, there are so many different hoops to jump through in that. One thing that I know a lot of people are suggesting is kind of make it like the goals. When they review them and they send the video up to Toronto, they look at them, and then there's the same guys doing it all the time. With goalie interference, when they have that challenge, it's done at each arena. So you have different crews, and different people might see things differently. Every time when we see a catch in the NFL and they show, here's what the fans think. Well, it's never 100%. Mm-hmm. I mean, never 100%. So you're not going to get 100% on something like this either when you have different sets of eyes, unless you have absolutely such concise, clear-cut rules that they can't be disputed. But we know that's impossible because everything's disputed. That's why they're disputing and looking at the calls again. So it is an interesting situation here. I would love to see him get it done. I would love to know what it was. Like I said, one of the other things that Babcock was so upset about, and we touched on this yesterday, was not just the fact that he didn't believe it was goaltender interference, but the fact that, or that he did believe it was goaltender interference, excuse me, but the fact that what the NHL told him after the game was different than what the officials in the game told mm-hmm. him. And that's where the inconsistency really, really relies. The NHL said there was no interference. On the ice, they told him there was interference, but he was outside the crease when his foot was still in the crease. And that's the kind of stuff you can't have. You at least, if you're going to lie, everybody knows you have to have everybody on the same page with the lies. And I'm not saying they lied, but if you're going to tell a story or a reason, the reason has to be consistent or it loses its credibility when you have two different sides telling you two different reasons for why you're wrong.
And that's what the NBA has run into with their two-minute report, where the on-court officials say one thing and then the league reviews the last 2 minutes and comes out with explanations that are sometimes contrary to what the on-court officials have said. So the NHL will need to decide what direction they want to go. The NFL, they have a crew that reviews the plays back in New York, and it's one crew that sits there with all the games. Major League Baseball does it differently in that all of the decisions that are made by replay go back to their office, and they're all done in a central location, so all of the games that are happening in one night is decided by the same crew, but that crew rotates because that crew is an on-field crew, and one of their assignments, instead of going to a next city, is to go into the bunker, so it's not as consistent as the NFL, but it has the advantage of being guys that are on the field that are more closely related to what the other guys are calling, so it's 6 1/2 dozen the other, I guess. Yeah, that's where they want to go.
And I know there's some people that have gone so far as to say, like, look, just get rid of replay altogether. Mm-hmm. They just don't want it. I don't have a problem with replay, but I do think they need some kind of more concise, consistent ruling in that, and so people do know what's going on out there. I saw that play, and I'm assuming, maybe it's, I know they say what happens when you assume, but when Gary Bettman talked about it at the All-Star break, when he said, look, if they're looking for a reason to overturn it, and it takes too long, then they should probably go with the call on the ice. That's what I think happened in that particular goal. They were trying, is his foot really there? Was he interfered with? Did it really happen? They stayed with the call on the ice that it was a goal. So if it, well, first off, if it wasn't a goal, there'd have been no review of anything, so it wouldn't have mattered. But I have a feeling that they did that because it was a goal, and that's how they called it. If they would have immediately said it was no goal, and then the other team would have challenged and said it was, I have a feeling they still would have kept the call on the ice because mm-hmm. it wasn't 100%. And let's be honest, a lot of times it's not 100%. How many times do we see is the puck over the goal line all the way or not? There's some that are really close. Those are easier. The offsides call, those are easier. Goalie interference, that's kind of interpretation.
It certainly is. And I'd be curious, maybe we can ask Gary Bettman next time we talk to him, that I wonder if the NHL, the NBA, the NFL, and the NBA, they all get together, Major League Baseball, the four major sports, and talk about instant replay within their own sports and what they can learn from each other, because so many fans are cross-sport fans, to maybe things that they do in the NFL can help things that they do in the NHL and vice versa.
That actually sounds like it should be one of those outside the lines or something on ESPN where they get them all together mm-hmm. and they do discuss everything with the panel from every single sport, when people can have like an open forum or something where people can say, why is this, why is this that, and get everything done. The only problem with that is the NFL alone would take over half an hour right. just to try to explain their rules, because nobody knows what's going
right.
on. Oh, that's a catch. That's not a
why?
Catch. That's a tackle. That's not a tackle. That's a spear. That's a clean hit. That's
why
what? It's the same play.
Right. Why are the rules that are applied to what is a catch in baseball not applied to what is a catch in the NFL when you're both trying to determine what a catch is? But yeah, I think it'd be interesting. And I wonder if there are those conversations between sports that the NHL says, hey, NBA, how do you handle this situation? And wonder if they compare notes. I think it could only be of value to them. But we don't always do what's of value, yeah. Frank.
I just wonder what a baseball move would be considered for a catch or not.
I'll explain that to you off the air. It's actually really quite simple. The ball is in possession. And
I actually do kind of know, so it was just a, you know, just...
The momentum of the catch is stopped.
Yeah.
There's voluntary release. Anyway, Pierre McGuire, good news for our buddy Pierre. He has recently gotten some good news regarding his participation in the Hall of Fame, correct?
Yes, he will be joining the committee to choose the Hall of Fame. He'll be taking over the place of legendary coach Scotty Bowman. Now, no, Bowman didn't resign. He didn't get fired from the job. He'd been doing it for 15 years. And after 15 years, somebody else replaces you. That's why this is happening. Pierre McGuire said, to receive a call from Lanny McDonald asking me to accept a position on the Hockey Hall of Fame Selection Committee is something I never thought was possible. I am honored and excited to know that I will be a part of the amazing group of hockey people whose mandate is to uphold the Hall's standards of excellence. Pierre McGuire, we got to meet him this season. Really nice guy, really accommodating. Obviously, he knows hockey a lot. Always down there between the periods, giving you that on-ice perspective. When I got even more respect for Pierre McGuire, because some people, you know, it's a taste. Some people like, some people don't. Let's face it, especially with the social media world that we live in today. A lot of haters out there for a lot of different things. Pierre McGuire 100% was sold to me when he walked in the Vegas Golden Knights locker room. And every single player to a man lit up like a kid on Christmas morning and was just couldn't wait to say hi and shake Pierre's hand and ask how things were and that. And he knew every one of them, their stories, their backgrounds, their this, their that, their family history and everything. Pierre McGuire is a down-to-earth good guy. And if every hockey player thinks that highly of him, I think even more highly of him myself.
All right, and certainly he has the background and the pedigree to know who's deserving, who is not. I'm excited that that he is on this board. There was an NHL player poll came out yesterday, Frank, where they polled a whole bunch of players asking them a number of different things about certain players, like which goalie is the most difficult to score on. They ask a bunch of skaters, not other goaltenders. 41% said Carey Price, 12.1% Jonathan Quick.
That is a huge, huge edge to Carey Price, and I understand it because people say Carey Price is the best of that there ever was. I do find it interesting a little bit, though, that Jonathan Quick at the 12.1%, there was five of them that they give the numbers for. 24.4% went to other voters outside of the five that they had there. So, to me, what I concluded from that was there's a lot of different people that think whatever their game or whatever, a lot of different goalies that are tough to beat. Kind of like, I guess, a pitcher in a baseball game. You think, okay, yeah, Nolan Ryan's tough to hit. That's why he threw all the no-hitters. But certain guys will say, well, no, it's actually this guy with the knuckleball or this one with this, that. Some players still have their things against a different goalie that for some reason they just can't beat them. So it's not always the obvious choice to most people.
One that is an obvious choice, though, who's the most difficult player to play against? 29.9% for Sidney Crosby, 23.7% for Connor McDavid, and then it goes all the way down to 4.6% for Patrick Kane. So just like the rest of the league, who's the best player, Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby, they're pretty much split on this one, too.
Yeah, Kane, Weber, and Kopitar, the other three that they mentioned in the list of five, and then 34.5% said other players out there as well. But yeah, Crosby, I have to be a little bit honest, I was a little bit surprised that McDavid was that high and that much separated from everybody else, just because you hear all the time that a lot of people say that he's not a two-way player, that he doesn't necessarily play defense, but we do see him get a lot of steals, and that's why he has all the breakaways. So for those people that think he's just completely one-dimensional, he's really not, because he gets those breakaways by back-checking and stealing the puck and doing a lot of different things. He's a good young player who, unfortunately for him, is on a team this year that's having a miserable season.
A landslide on the who's the toughest player, Ryan Reeves comes in at 44.7%. The next closest person, Milan Lucic, at 14.8%, and it drops all the way down to 4%, Zdeno Chara.
Yeah, so Ryan Reeves, we know he's a tough player. The question is for Vegas Golden Knights fans and the organization, is there a way to fit that into the Golden Knights game plan and scheme and everything to make him an effective player with Vegas and start winning hockey games and that? We know he's tough. Everybody knows he's tough. Certainly these players out there know he's tough. But Ryan Reeves, well, as Braden McNabb said when he first joined the team, I was so glad when when I didn't have to play him anymore when I came here to Vegas. And if he's going to come out here, I'd rather have him with us than against us, because there's a lot of people that do not want to have to face this guy on the ice.
Which player is the best role model? Now, that went 33% to Sidney Crosby, the next closest person, 9.6%, Jonathan Toews. But when it comes to who would you select to start a franchise, Connor McDavid, the overwhelming favorite, 48.6% to Sidney Crosby's 23.8%.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that it's Connor McDavid because of his age. Crosby, number two, he's the second best player. But I'll tell you what, the guy in third place there, Austin Matthews, I don't really know that you can go bad with him either. He's even a little bit younger. He's got a lot of game left. I would almost lean maybe in the Austin Matthews category over both McDavid and Crosby.
Well, they certainly came to the decision that if you need one game to win, who is the number one player at any position you would want on your team? First pick for just about everybody, 43.7% to Sidney Crosby, 15.3% to Connor McDavid. Sid the Kid still everyone's number one pick.
Yeah, and Crosby certainly there. And, you know, I mean, some people might say a goalie or something like that, but Crosby, obviously, I mean, there's a reason the guy's won all the Stanley Cups he has. There's a reason that he does a lot of things out there. He's highly respected. He was also voted as the best team player in the poll by the players out there. Interesting, Jonathan Toews was second in that one, so maybe Toews just not with as much skill out there. But Sidney Crosby is a great, great hockey player, and Connor McDavid is very good. But Crosby's still the best in the game right now for overall doing everything, in my opinion.
And when you think and you sort of look at these and you think about Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid and Jonathan Toews and Austin Matthews, the NHL is in a really good spot right now, and they have some pretty good people to hang their hat on.
Oh, absolutely. And then you throw in the Goudreaus coming up and the Barzells. And mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of talent in this league. And that's one of the reasons I love hockey. And that's why every time when we do the news and we talk about the injury reports, we have to do it. And it's something that we need to do. But I cringe every morning when I look at it and we see different things because, I'll be honest, I don't ever want to see anybody get injured, even on the teams that I can't stand, because I want to see the best players in the world play on a night-to-night basis. That's one of the reasons I love this sport.
That's right, and that's why we hope Riley Smith is back tomorrow to join William Karlsson, who William Karlsson saw the best sign last night. Little kid sitting in the front row with a mop of blonde hair, and the sign said, "When my hair grows up, it wants to be William Karlsson." How good was that?
I miss my hair of my youth.
You still grow it back, Frank.
Not like I used to.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about things like hair and some superstitions around the NHL. This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. And welcome back, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Wrapping it up, and Frank, a little breaking news on the David Backes story. The decision has come down.
Yes, David Backes, who was caught late with that high hit in the first period of Tuesday's game, assessed that two-minute penalty for roughing. Well, the NHL Department of Player Safety has noted that Backes made a substantial contact with Nielsen's head. The puck was clearly no longer in his possession, so he gets a three-game suspension.
Wow, three-game suspension. I know we promised you some superstitions. We're going to hold that till tomorrow because David Backes ate up our time, Frank. That's terrible of him.
A dirty little player.
Yeah.
Missing three games, he gets it. That's what you deserve.
Yeah, well, we're going to go into Detroit tomorrow night, 4 o'clock, for the pregame show.
Will there be a video tribute to Tomáš Tatar?
Yes, that will be the big question. Well, we will let you know, 4 o'clock for the pregame show, 4:30 for Puck Drop live from Little Caesars Arena. We will see you tomorrow, but stick around right now for T.C. Martin. The Doctor is next.